Hi, McCartney fans, and welcome to episode 129 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. And I'm joined by my partner in crime, my buddy, my backwards traveler, Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on?
What's up there, partner? I see you're on remote location tonight.
Yes, so. Remote location. We're just going to keep it on the down low where I'm at right now.
So. You're not definitely, I don't see those nice wall of McCartney albums like I usually see.
Exactly.
So I'm doing well and really looking forward to our new guest that we have here tonight. So,
yeah, and as everybody can see, we are joined by a guest this week who is a multi-talented instrumentalist. He's on two tracks with this new Ram On tribute CD. We're really looking forward to talking to him and his past and all everything he's got coming up in the future. And this is Timmy Shaw. So Timmy, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Absolutely.
Welcome, brother. Yeah. Welcome. The carrying, or we know, carrying, it's like the season of Ram. We had Denny and Fernando, and now we have you. And it's like all the Ram stuff's out, and it's really exciting. And, you know, this project that brought together so many musicians across, over the world, all ages, you know, running the spectrum. And just so, you know, we're here just, it's, you know, we wouldn't have really heard about anybody else without this project. So it's a chance to kind of meet and learn, you know, all different cool things about it, like yourself. So,
yeah.
Well, I appreciate it, man. It's an honor to be on the album. I mean, it's such a, I mean, A, Denny is just awesome. And then it's right. And then I started seeing the list as the other acts are coming in because Fernando pulled me in and he's like, hey, are you interested? Before I knew who anybody was going to be on it. And I was like, yeah, man, whatever you want. Bongos. And then,
right. Yeah. So before we get in, we jump too far ahead of ourselves. Speaking of Ram, you know, we got a brand new restored version of Three Legs, the video, which is now on PaulMcCartney.com. Or I'm sorry, the Paul McCartney YouTube channel. Sorry. Right. So you can check that out there. And what else? And obviously, Andy, you got the Half Speed Master Ram behind you. You got that in the mail the other day. So cool. Glad you got that. You haven't had a chance to listen to it, though.
No,
right?
It's still sealed in shrink wrap. But if it's anything like the McCartney Half Speed Master, I mean, all these records that have been repressed all sound great. I mean, I don't know really. Okay, I really can't tell the difference. We were a sucker. We just buy it again. So.
Absolutely. And this is what you're probably your 30th copy of Ram, probably.
Probably. There's something definitely well over 20.
Right.
So, but you know, Timmy can relate because we're music geeks and this is what we do. So, yeah. But yeah, so, it'll be cool to play. So, yeah. And we're just waiting for the official CD, you know, the
correct, from the Ram On. Hopefully there was a little bit of a delay. So hopefully we'll be getting those here in the next 2 weeks, hopefully. So probably by the 28th, I would imagine. So, but anyways, as you all know, we're here with Timmy Shaw. So you kind of just got into it just a little bit. So let's just jump right into this and then we'll get a little bit into your backstory after this. But so you knew Fernando Perdomo then, right?
I knew Fernando. So I originally from New Jersey. I moved out to LA in, I think it was 2013 or 2012. Anyway, the first show I played in 2013 with a band in LA, Fernando was playing bass with a guy named Chris Price, who is now one of the singers in Bebopalula, who did Uncle Albert on the album.
Okay.
So I met both Chris and Fernando that like the first show I did out here. And I just kind of kept in touch, and Fernando played some guitar for me if I'm doing like solo music shows and stuff. And when the pandemic hit last year, we just were like, hey, we all kind of have like a home studio set up. Let's just do like some fun projects. So we started, the first thing we did, like, I mean, this was like a week into the pandemic last March. Mm-hmm. And he posted something on Facebook about like, I think he just typed Shelter Skelter. And it just kind of took on from there. And I was like, we should cover that. And he started sending me and another friend of mine, Nick Bertling, who was also all over this album on Ram On. And the three of us, Nick cut drums in Indiana, and Fernando was in like the other side of LA, but he did guitar, and then I did bass and vocals. And we did like a parody video of Helter Skelter that Fernando wrote some stupid lyrics for. We put out a video, and then we did a couple other videos throughout the pandemic, and we just kept calling it Shelter Skelter.
Okay.
So we were kind of in touch a lot during the last year, and then he was like, hey, and he reached out to Nick and I, and he was like, hey, I got this project that I'm talking to Denny Sywell about. Are you guys interested? And we're like, anything you want. Like, anything.
Yeah.
And he's like, I know he had done a couple tracks with him.
Right.
A couple years ago.
Right. Yep.
And so he was like, yeah, he's into doing Ram from top to bottom. Like, awesome. Yeah. Anything you want. Like, you want me to just clap? I'll do that. If you want, some, if you want some vocals?
Anything. Nope. Right? Anything. Nope. Anything. You would have done it.
Anything at all.
So talk about that a little bit, about your McCartney. I mean, when did you become a fan of McCartney? I mean, obviously we know you're going to get into your dad and your brother. Your uncle about that. But did your fandom of McCartney come from that?
I mean, so my father and uncles have a Beatles tribute band, and so I never really even discovered the Beatles. It was just kind of there. It was all around. Whole time I was growing up. So I saw him in concert in 89. I mean, I think I was five or six. It was in DC. And it was like, oh my God, this is like, just blew my mind. And I'm like, I'm seeing a Beatle? Like, these guys that were like, they seemed ancient to me. And he was probably like 50 at the time.
Right.
And I was like, I'm seeing Paul McCartney in concert. Like, this is unbelievable. And then I just played the Tripping Alive Fantastic album like over and over again. So that was like right when I was a little kid, and I was like, that was kind of my into his solo material. Like, I knew some of this stuff, but that album kind of had a little bit of everything. And then I started going, oh, this was on this album, oh, this was on this one. And then I started digging into that, and then like the next thing, when I was like a teenager, the anthology came out, and that was just like, there's new Beatles songs? Like, this is insane.
It was a great time to be a younger fan. I'm a little bit older than you, but I was in high school when the anthologies came out, and it was just like, whoa. It was like
mind-blowing. It was unbelievable.
Right.
I remember my parents let me stay up at midnight to go to the local record shop them at midnight.
Yes.
So I was like, I remember sitting like, trying to stay up till midnight reading like The Lost World or something, like a book that I was like, oh my God, I gotta make it to midnight to get to the store. And then after that, it was like, you know, Flaming Pie came out, and that was like, okay, this is like at like 13, 14, somewhere around that time.
So
that was kind of my in. And then I started going back and discovering all the other stuff. But those were kind of my ins to it.
You discovered Ram after all this, kind of after that period of like.
Yeah, it was. And it was really like, once I kind of like Flaming Pie was really like the first of his solo albums that I was like, this is unreal. Like from top to bottom, I knew the singles and stuff, you know, and like everyone knows Band on the Run. And it was like, I knew the Beatles stuff, and it would be around, but I wasn't that familiar with like the deep cuts. And then I just started going back album by album. And then it was like, oh my God, this stuff is amazing. How did I go 13 years without discovering? Wingspan came out, and like, you know, when I was in high school, so just like I got into like the history of the Wing stuff from that. Right. But growing up with my father does Paul in the Beatles tribute show. So it was like, I had a Paul McCartney father figure, literally.
Right.
And I also I would fill in with them, like my first, like my summer jobs. They do a couple different shows. They do a Beatle tribute show, and they do like another one. And I would fill in drumming at like 15 instead of, you know, working at the grocery store or something. I would go out on the road with them for like Flipping 2 months. Burns. So I.
What's the
yeah
what's
exactly?
What's the name of the band? The tribute band.
The Mahoney Brothers.
And
the Mahoney Brothers, and they the name of the show they go is Long Live the Beatles, but they do a couple of, so it's like, you know, the Mahoney Brothers present, and they'll do this show, and then Mahoney's
theme.
Event, and
they'll do, right.
Yeah, and they do two basic shows, but they'll do a couple different ones. They do one that's like a, if the Beatles got back together in the 70s kind of thing,
called
you know, the Beatles and Beyond. It'll do like a mix of, you know, all right, what they would do if they did a concert then. And
where do they mainly play? I mean, pre-pandemic.
I mean, they've toured all over. They've done all over the country. I think they've done like 48 states in the country, and wow. they've done overseas and stuff.
Oh, awesome.
They primarily do nowadays. They've kind of kept it to like the Northeast, just because they have some of the guys have like younger kids in school and stuff, and they just were like, "Yeah, we're not really traveling that much anymore." But so I'll still fly in and do some dates with them here and there. Which is nice, because it's like, cool. I'll come in and fill in and play with them and then like see the family. And I'll be like, all right, cool. I'll pick up a couple gigs and go and see the family.
The gigs are easy because it's like riding a bike with the music that you know so well.
Absolutely. Yep.
Right. Very cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the process here, because then, you know, he says that you want to come do some stuff. I mean, I'm sure you didn't know what to expect.
I didn't.
Okay.
So the first thing he said was, Denny's coming in. This was like a Tuesday. And he's like, Denny's coming in to cut the drums on Friday. I need some vocals for him to drum to. Like, I lay down some scratch tracks, like, of like to a click, and just so he has something just to play to. Can you guys lay down some vocals? And he's like, but here's the thing. If he likes it, he's picking all the vocals. So if you lay something down good, it might make the album. So wow. So at first it was like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll just lay something down. Then I was like, oh, this better be good, because I might not get a second chance at this. So he's like, what songs are you guys interested in? And I was like, I'm like, this is a beast, but I want to give Monkberry a shot.
Wow.
Like right off the top. And he was like,
You pick the most lyrically crazy song on the whole freaking record.
Yeah, I know. And it had a screamer. So I was just like,
yeah.
I'm like, I have to see if I can pull this off, because like, it's one of my favorite Paul vocals. And I'm like, if I'm not doing it justice in my mind, like, I don't even want to move forward. Right. I don't want him to hear it, like, let alone.
It's such a ballsy move to just pick that song, you know, to just tackle it. Ah, I could do Ramon, or I could do, I would do Monkberry. Like, fuck, are you kidding me?
I mean, Dear Boy might be my favorite song on the album, but yeah. I think I could do a better, well, I wanted to give a shot. It was like, let me just try it and see if it works. And he was like, can you lay down Smile Away also while you're doing that? Because I don't have anybody yet lined up for that. And I was like, yeah, sure. So that was kind of an afterthought. And I sent him over, and he sent me a screenshot of, he sent the vocals over to, I think it was just a scratch track. So he sent the scratch tracks to Denny, and he sent over a screen cap of like the message back from Denny that was just like, wow, period, for that. And I was like, all right, that's a good sign. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm like, so he's like, we still haven't decided. So there were months that went by from then on that I was just like,
oh, are they using it? Are they not?
Yeah. Are they not? He's like, we're going to make a decision in like January, but like, he goes, he liked it. He goes, but we're going to, you know, multiple people are sending in for every song.
So do you remember exactly what month this was?
This was December.
Okay. Okay.
And he kind of already, this was December. And I think he said by like February, he's like, to make it out, to get them out in time, which apparently it's a little delayed, but to get it out in time for the 50th anniversary, he needed it like 3 months in advance for the label. So he's like, we're going to make all our decisions.
Right. I had heard from a friend, because I had a mutual friend who knew Denny. So I was going to try to use him to get to Denny for an interview for this show. And then, so he got a hold of Denny and said, well, they're working on this. So this was in December, I think. And he said, well, he's working on this Ram project. And I was like, ooh, can't wait to hear this.
And Fernando was really like, you know, keep it quiet, because we don't want, he's like, I want to be able to like, you know, handpick the people and like, you know, reach out to people. And I don't want like a million people coming in at the same time. He's like, oh, I want to be on the album. He's like, cause I want to have some control over.
No, I gotta say that part of it seemed like it was very well done, because then like the press release hit, and then it was like, boom, it was everywhere. Right. Like, so that part of it, I mean, like, and I didn't even really know it was coming. It was like, boom, here it is. And like, you know, the media blitz of it was, everything was like, was all over the place. So it was done. It was orchestrated very well from that.
I thought they did. I thought they did a great job all the way around. Like, as far as, I mean, Fernando worked his ass off to pull the whole thing together and reaching out to the right people. And like, there's people that I'm still like flipping through the book the other day. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that person was on the, like, I had someone comment the other day. It was like, hey, great job on the songs. And I'm like, this guy sounds familiar. So I'm flipping through the book and I was like, oh, he played the phone book on, like they had him play the phone book on another day. And I was like, awesome. I was like, hey, great job on the phone book. Like,
so, so talk about then when you do, when you're doing the, you're laying down Monkberry Moon Delight. We, I mean, how many takes did you do? Was it a first take?
Yeah, was it one take, two take? Like, you know,
I took it. I took that one like a verse at a time because it was such a screamer, and I'm like, I want to get certain things in each verse. Really, my girlfriend, who's a huge McCartney fan, she'd be like, I don't like the way you said this line. She's like, Paul does it this way, and like, I was like, I don't know about that. I go back and listen to it every time she was right. I was like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I could hit that better.
You recorded it basically one line at a time?
One line at a time, but I did like a verse at a time.
A verse.
And then I went, and then I went back and like punched certain lines where it was like, okay, yeah, I got like I misheard a lyric that everyone was like, oh no, it's this. And I was like, you're right. I've been hearing it the wrong way.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you, because there's really, I mean, I have a Japan pressing that actually has like the lyrics written in them. But like, other than that, like, what did you have any? Did you have an official? Because there is no really official lyrics, right?
I kind of went from, I mean, would say like half from memory. Yeah, a half from memory. And then like, if there were certain lines, I was like, what was that? What's that line in that one verse? And then I would look it up online and then I listened to it. I'm like, no, that's not it. I don't think that's right. No, I don't think so. I think I made like a master lyric sheet for myself, kind of picking from all the wrong lyrics and then which ones I thought were right and which ones are wrong. But
so
my voice was shredded by the end of that.
I couldn't imagine.
We were really impressed with the performance on that track. I mean,
thank you.
Bravo to you on that. So was you tackled Monkberry Moon Delight and then Smile Away?
Smile Away was pretty much one take. And then I think we went back and he was trying to, Fernando was switching the format, or like, we're going to move the guitar solo a little bit here. Can you do something in this spot? And like, I think after Denny did the drums, I think we came back and I did a couple fixes to that, just to kind of make the form work a little different. Cause it's not the exact as the album. It's pretty close to the album, but they kind of just blues that one up. And, but yeah, and then afterwards he was like, oh, by the way, Elton John's guitar player Davey Johnson is gonna be be on that track too. I was like, what? I was like, all right, awesome. So I don't think I heard that until like the whole album was completed, that I heard his tracks on it and stuff. But
because almost everybody was just recording theirs on remotely. A file drive and sending it, right?
Exactly.
Which is, you know, such, I mean, and you, with the great thing about this record is that you really can't tell that when you listen to it, which is, you know, you can't tell that it was all just flowing. I mean, it really sounds polished. It's produced well, it's mixed well, and it sounds,
and that's like,
yeah.
That's all to Fernando's credit. I mean, he got guys who are, you know, all these session guys are like, you know, professionals. Like, it was like, all right, these guys know what they're doing. To make the play like a band, even with tracks. But he also, him and the producer, or the guy who mixed it, Zach, I can't remember his last name, Diskin or something like that. But they both did a great job of just like making it sound like a band, which is crazy because it was 100+ musicians all around the world. That you're like, how did this work? But I thought he did a great job. I was just really happy to be a part of it. But
So then Smile Away, I mean, how did that come? Did that come easy for you?
That one's definitely a lot more in my range, like without really having to push too hard. And like, to be honest, it was like probably, you know, on the bottom half of my favorite songs on Ram, that it was kind of like it's just kind of a throwaway. Like, it's a cool tune, but like, I thought what they came up with really kind of gave it like a little more dirt and drive to it, that I was like, okay, I see where you're going with this. And I thought like Denny played like a little more of like a blues, like, you know, some of the songs he played it fill for fill, because he's like, I know, like Uncle Albert, I think he said he listened to like his original recording and wanted to make sure. He's like, I really liked what I played on the beginning, and he's like, I'm not gonna top that. But I thought he switched it up just a little bit more of like a blues groove and Smile Away. So I thought, I was like, all right, I can see where they're going with this. And it felt a little looser. And
yeah, I just, Monkberry, I'm still like, I've heard the song 1,000 times and I still don't even know what the words mean. Like, how do you when a rattle of like, what is that? What is that?
So I started
Snakes, I think, was it?
Winner, oh my God, like, you know, I can't, it, I don't even know what he, like that second verse, like what the hell is he saying?
And it's, I didn't even register what the meaning of the song was. So then I started like reading about it and it was like, oh, he was saying that like when the kids, they used to call Milk Monk.
Well,
and
it
was just like, he's like, we just wanted to come up with this like fantastical, you know, nonsense lyrics. And I was like, okay. So he's doing like an Eye on the Walrus kind of thing. Where it's just
Nonsense,
you know, pulling this line and this line and this line. And like, I think he said it was like Love Potion number 9, what he was thinking of kind of thing.
But like the lyric, when a rattle of rats had awoken, the sinews, the nerves and the veins, like that's, it just doesn't flow right. It doesn't sound right.
No, like that was one of the lines. I was like, the sinews, I don't even, okay. All right. Got
the
it.
Sinews, like what is like, but it's, you did it. He did such a great job on it, man. Yes. Unbelievable.
Thank you. Like I said, it was like, it's one of my favorite Paul vocals of all time. Like, I mean, it's up there with like, I'm Down and like, it's just like all these songs that were like, all right, the screamer stuff, and especially in the 70s, he was just
at his
prime. Like it's just like so effortlessly. Mm-hmm. Like I've seen Paul the first time in like 89 and I've seen him, I think like 13 times. Mm-hmm. And it's like, when you see him, like you hear recordings of him live and you can hear his voice, you know, obviously it's, as he's getting older, but like live, he still just hits those notes. Like it's nothing. Like, I'm like, how is he, even if it's like hoarse, he's still hitting notes.
Because he's not changing the key.
Yeah, and he isn't changing the key.
He doesn't change. He doesn't change the keys.
I saw him. This was like one of the coolest things in my life, but I saw him when he played in between the two dates at, I forget what that festival was called. It was like, they were calling it Old Cella out here when it was
I know what you're talking about.
It was at Coachella,
Neil Young was on that night with him.
Yeah. And he, I can't think of the name of it. Anyway, but he, in between those two dates, he did a bar date at this little bar in the middle of the desert. And I snuck into it.
Oh, great.
I heard about it. My mom was visiting. I just dropped her off at LAX out here. It like sucks for her, but I just dropped her out. I heard about it and I was like, wait a second. I'm like, he's playing today. And I'm like, I can make it out there in like an hour and a half. So I literally, I had a gig that night. I called someone to cover the gig. I'm driving. So I drove out and I got there and I was like in line close enough that I would have gotten in, and they ended up like merging these two lines and it was just a total clusterfuck. And it was just like, anyway, and I got talking to his bus driver, and I just was like chatting him up for like hours, just talking. And he was like, I bet you could just walk in over there. Like, I don't want to throw him under the bus, but he was like, I don't know. This, and some security guy just walked away, and I just like walked like I was supposed to be there, walked in the gate, and I walked in, and it was like Junior's Farm, and I was like, it turned out it was like the third song for the night, and I got to see him with like 200 people in this tiny little bar, and it was just mind blowing. It was amazing. It was like one of the highlights of my life.
What year was that, Timmy? What year was that, Timmy?
That was I have a poster.
Was it 16 or 17?
I think it was 2016.
Yeah.
It only says October 13th up there. But yeah.
I think it was
Passing and Harry. It's 2016. Yeah. Yep.
Amazing. Wow. Yeah.
And then I was going that weekend anyway to the festival. So it was like, went from like 200 people to like 90,000 people or whatever was at this festival.
Do you know if Paul's heard the whole like record? Like, has he heard
Denny has said that he's heard, I've only heard it like through Fernando from Denny, that like he sent it to him and he enjoyed it, but like I haven't heard anything specific songs or anything
about or anything. Yeah, just because it would be so awesome to hear him react to it, right?
It's amazing. I had sent a question in on Twitter to like, hey, ask Paul a question, and last night I was searching for the Ram On stuff and I saw that Paul answered one of my questions in like December that I just saw was on his website last night. I was like, that's crazy. I'm like, hey, how did I miss this? Like for 5 months or nobody else. But it was like, Timmy Sean asks, and it was like, I know you like James Jamerson as a bass influence. Like, who's as a drummer, who's your drum influence kind of thing? And he was like, oh, I love Ringo, John Bonham, and Keith Moon, but these days I really love Abe Laboriel Jr.
Right.
I was like, that's a pretty safe answer, but all right.
Yeah.
Very safe.
Yeah.
So did you get to see Denny Seiwell perform any of these, lay down any of the drum tracks?
Fernando was sending me videos as he was like, hey, he's drumming to your song right now.
Okay.
But yeah. It was still enough of the pandemic that it was like, we're kind of keeping to our own. Like, he went to Fernando's place, but I know they like were wearing masks and keeping. So everyone was still pretty separate from there. But yeah, it's funny. I met Denny once, and I was with Fernando at the NAMM show. I bumped into Fernando, and then he was like, hey, that's Denny Seiwell. Literally like 2 minutes after something, he's like, hey, that's Denny Seiwell. Do you want to meet Denny? And I was like, sure. Yeah. Sure. Sounds great. So he walked up to him, and this was before they had recorded or anything. And he's like, hey, Denny, I don't know if you remember me. And I don't know if I've told Fernando this since then, if he remembers this, but Denny was like, yeah, you're a hard guy to forget. And I was like, oh, that's funny. And he was like, no, yeah, I remember you, of course. And he was like, hey, it's my friend Tim. And so that was the only time that I briefly met Denny in person.
Okay.
And then this whole thing came up. So I'm looking forward to it. And we've messaged back and forth a bit since
we worked on the album. And if you've gone to the fest, I mean, I used to see him do the Ram clinics at the Beatle Fests over the years. He would just do it. You know, they would fire it up and he would just drum to it.
He would just drum that along with it.
Yeah. Right. And so he's done that.
That's awesome.
And it's really, Tom and I have talked, like, it's nice to see Denny's like so like open and very positive. Like, he just isn't like, he's willing to talk about it and to anybody. His period with Paul. It's really cool to see. I mean, he was gracious. He did a spot with us, Fernando and him did a spot with just about a month ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
It was just so cool to see him so open about it, and he's like proud about it, you know, like, because I know, like, for a while there, like decades, they didn't really talk about it, but now, like, him and Paul seem like they're really on good terms, and that's really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, it's just, and then Fernando saying, he's like, oh yeah, like, he just texts Paul. I was like, well, that's insane, like, that's just crazy. Are you stealing this phone, or are you like
so did you have to go back once they said, okay, we're gonna pick your vocals on these two tracks? Did you go back and fix any of the tracks, or did they keep it as is?
I fixed some stuff on Smile Away. He ended up switching like the arrangement around. Like, so he was like, hey, in this section, can you sing this into here? And can you do the, Smile Away Sweetly here? And then this is, we're going to do this here for the outro. And then on Monkberry, I laid, he sent me the mix, and I was like, I think there's an acoustic on the record. He's like, lay it in. And I was like, all right, cool. So I laid in the acoustic, and I was like, I have an idea for a guitar solo, kind of doubling like the super screaming part at the end, and like just going to riff something. I'm like, what do you think? And he's like, dude, go for it. So, and that ended up making the album. So I laid some guitar. So I'm on acoustic, and I'm doing some guitar soloing at the end of Monkberry. So that stuff, but the vocal from Monkberry that he drummed to like 2 months earlier stayed as is, which was awesome.
Very cool. Very cool.
So I didn't have to lose my voice again either.
Cherry Red Records, they graciously gave us the file we listened to. Blown away by the whole thing. Just not your performance, but everybody's performance on the record.
I listened to it 5 times the day they sent us the file electronically at work. I told Thomas, I'm on like my 5th or 6th listen today. I'm a school teacher.
Oh, that's awesome.
I played it at school like all day long. Kids are like, what are you listening to? I'm like, don't worry about it. You don't worry about it. Like, we're hearing all this weird screaming. I'm like, yeah, I know, it's great, but don't worry about it.
So then now all this time, you know, that's going by this December, I mean, we're also getting, with the new McCartney record McCartney 3 and
reimagined and Tom's 85,000 copies. Right.
Right. So when did you decide you wanted to cover Lavatory Lil?
So he
put out, leading up to the release, he started teasing, there was like the billboards around, and it was like, it was the music. I can't read music, so I started scouring. I'm like,
you're like Paul then?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, Paul put up like the music and he's like, hey, put your cover up of the song. And I'm like, I can't read music. I don't know what the song is. So I'm scouring, trying to find leaked versions online. And I'm like, is there any? Okay. And like, I saw some friends of mine that are like reviewers and stuff. They were like, hey, I just heard Paul's album. It sounds great. So I'm like reaching out. I'm like, hey, can I just, anybody have a, and I finally found some link. Nobody that I knew had anything or would at least give it up. So I finally found like kind of a low resolution version. Yeah, I started just,
everybody got that one.
and I was like, and I'm listening to it and I'm like, all right, I don't know what I could do with that. That's cool. Yeah, I don't know. And I hit like Laboratory Low came on. I was like, oh, that I could do that. I was like, yeah, I could do like a rock version of that. Sure enough, I feel like I could knock something out fast enough. So I started recording it and I had it done, recorded. I sent it to Ronnie Bingenheimer, who legendary, he was like an LA DJ for years. He broke like the cards, all these, and he was playing new songs from an album that I was recording last year, an original album. So I'd been sending him tracks as I was finishing them. And I was like, hey, I have this Paul McCartney song that I covered that's not out yet. I was like, I don't know what the rules are on this, but if you're interested in playing it. So I had it and I looked into it and I was like, all right, there's nothing that, so I set it up to release on Spotify. So I had it on Spotify and AirPlay on Sirius.
Wow.
And a video out, because he moved the date back a week. Originally, I set it up for the day the album came out.
Right.
And then he pushed the release back a week. So now my album is set to come out. My cover of it, the single,
came out the week before his album. Wow.
So I got AirPlay and they were like, this is a first for us. Like, here's a cover of a song that's not out yet. By Paul McCartney. I think by that point, they might have had, at Sirius, they might have had it to play. So I think, and they played it back to back, which was awesome. Oh. So he played them both back to back, and then he played it like, I don't know, 20 times. There was like, he would play like 3 times of his show. Like, very that cool. was like, this is, so every Sunday I'd see like, and then the views started going up for him. I did like a little video of it and it was awesome. And it was just like, I don't know if this is against any rules, but
it's out there.
So it was fun.
Right. As somebody that's capable of doing that, you know, laying down all the tracks yourself. Talk about that process. I mean, what do you start with? I mean, do you do drums first, you know, guitars? I mean, how do you proceed with that?
Usually for me, whatever song I wrote it on, either if it's on piano or guitar, usually I'll lay that down to like, I'll figure out what tempo I want the song to be. And then I'll lay that down to a click track. And then I have something, like I won't keep that on the final recording, but it just gives me something to play drums to.
Okay.
So then usually I'll go from that, maybe a scratch vocal, but usually it's just a guitar or a piano thing. And then I'll go and I'll lay drums down. Sometimes I'll do like a full, I'll go drums and then just get all the ideas down as fast as I can and get guitar, get a bass, and just do it real sloppy and then have like a demo and then kind of go back to the beginning. And then be like, all right, now let me replace the drums. Now let me replace the bass. Now let me replace the guitars. Okay. And then usually vocals are last. A lot of times for me, especially if I'm writing stuff, it's like a chore for me to write vocals. Like I can write and I can come up with melodies fast and I can sit at piano and come up with stuff and be like, all right. And then it comes down and it's like, all right, I got all this homework to do writing lyrics. Like I might have a line or two that'll be like, all right, that line kind of sucks anyway. Let me see what else sounds phonetically like that kind of works. And
so you usually won't write until you have the song then, right?
Yeah, for me, it's, I know some people, it's like they write the lyrics and then they, whatever the lyrics, and then I'll write the song to represent. And it's like, that makes no sense to me. Like, I don't know how you can do that. It just doesn't compute, but like, it works for some people. But I think it's different for everyone. There's different songs. Sometimes I'll sit down and I'll just come up with a phrase. I'm like, oh, that's a good phrase for a song. Like that's, and then work from there. But most times for me, it's like a voice note on a phone and leave that and just like hum a melody and get some ideas down. And then later go back and figure out what the chords are. and then just start demoing it and replace and replace and replace, and then eventually just be like, all right, that sounds, that doesn't suck that much.
Timmy, going back to the McCartney 3 stuff, what did you think about that record overall?
I think it's awesome that Paul's still, you know, going out there and experimenting. Like, I think he just, like, wants to do the unexpected.
Right.
For, like, I think for him, it's just like, all right, well, I've done this, and now I want to do this. And I've done this, and now I want to do this. And, like, all right, so it's just going to do, like, a loose – I'm going to try different sounds in the studio, but, like, I don't know. I'm a guy that, like, I just am drawn to hooks. Like, I just, like, feel like, and I feel like there's something, and this is out of his hands, but I feel like as he's getting older and his voice is lower,
right,
he tends to sing songs in lower keys, which is like what you would do, but, like, you lose some energy. Like, you lose some punch when you're singing something lower. Like, Ringo does songs like three steps down from the original version of concert, yeah, so he can just, like, practically talk.
Yes,
it's, like, right, it's fun, but, like, it,
like Ringo, how, like, the, like, way the way he sings Photograph now, he, like, talks it.
Right, he talks it, and he can do that with, like, the whole night, and it's just like, okay. So, like, I try to hear the song sometimes, and I'm like, man, if this was like 1976 or something, Paul would do this like an octave higher and be screaming his ass off, and you're like, oh man, that would be. But I still think it's amazing that he's making music.
Yeah, Tom and I think different, but I don't know if it has the staying power that, like, Egypt Station has. For me, anyway. I don't know. I don't know.
Every album that he's put out in, like, the last, like, 20 years, like, there's always, like, three or four that I'm like, well, that's a great song. Like, that justifies there being an album. Like, down to, from, like, Driving Rain through now, that it's like, all right, I can find, like, three or four great songs, and I'm like, this is amazing. And then there's other songs that are just like, okay, that's not my cup of tea, but, like, it's cool that he's trying this.
Right.
Or, like, and I think the covers of the reimagined McCartney 3 kind of shows, it's like, okay, like, I can see what he's going for, almost more with some of the covers, that it's like, all right, he's trying to do, like, an R&B, this kind of thing, or, like, a, you know, what's the Lead Belly he's recommending, right, for the, but I mean, it's McCartney.
Right. And Tom and I have talked, is it like McCartney fatigue? Is there just too much McCartney product? And people were just like, you know, like, we've talked about that, Tom, you know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, for us, you know, as being spoiled as we have been, getting a record 2 years after Egypt Station, you know, and still processing that.
And, yeah,
you
know, and all the Beatles stuff on top of all that.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
And then the Lennon stuff. So it's like, you know, and Timmy, I think you can, like, relate to this, like, because we're both similar ages. Like, the anthologies were, like, the epic of, like, part of our childhood. Tremendous, yeah, right? And then it's like, over the last, like, 7 or 8 years, it's like, the box sets are just, like, coming, like, every other week. Oh, another box set. And it's like, over a Flaming Pie dropped in July. Yeah. I mean, it's like, there's so much crap.
I haven't even, like, I just got the Flowers in the Dirt, like, $150 box set. And it was like, all right, I love Flaming Pie, but I'm like, I need to budget when then I'm going to pick up that one next. Like, it's like, all right, and I haven't even worked my way through all this stuff yet. Like, I was looking, like, watching the DVD through the pandemic, like, okay, all the sessions with Elvis Costello and stuff where they're, like, jamming. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. But I haven't even worked my way through it all yet.
Right. It's just it's great that we have it all. It's just, there's so damn much of it now, you know? Yeah. So it's, you know, I know you can relate to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I used to buy every single thing. And now it's kind of like, all right, I'm a little pickier now. Like,
well, you know, I did too with that reimagine, where I only bought, you know, one vinyl copy, one CD copy. Whereas, you know, with the McCartney 3, the proper album, I got, you know, just about every color. Vinyl. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that day of work when they were announcing it, I mean, I hardly got anything done.
Tom, I remember that. Yeah.
You know, because you're trying to get them all before they all ran out very quickly, you know.
They know what they're doing. Yeah, exactly.
But you did a video for Larry Tree Lil too. Talk about that. I mean, because that seemed like you had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, it was great. So I I made a point of, like, as I was recording it, so this way I didn't have to, like, fake it later. Oh, I wanted to make sure that I actually, like, set up the camera as I was doing each intro. Like, once I kind of had the arrangement down and stuff and learned it, I was like, all right, I wanted to make sure I can do it in one take from beginning to end. So everything that's in that video was actually, like, the recording of the album. So even if I'm, like, standing, you know, it looks like I'm posing, that's actually, like, when I was recording it. So, And then I like edited all the, you know, multi-screen stuff, which I got a good run at that from, we did me, Fernando, and Nick, one of the Shelter Skelter songs we did. There was a comedian who put up lyrics, like parody lyrics to Bohemian Rhapsody, like last March, and it was like Coronavirus Rhapsody. And I was like, we don't even have to write the lyrics. I can just credit this guy. And they're like, do you really want to take on Bohemian Rhapsody? And I was like, I'm a huge Queen fan. I'm like big Brian May fan. I'm like, yeah, I really do. And it's like Fernando's like, all right, I'm playing bass. He's like, you can take keys and guitar and vocals. So Nick hit the drums, and I spent like weeks on like 16-hour days just like nonstop working out all of the Bohemian Rhapsody parts. And then I edited a video together, and there's like they were sending videos in, and I'm shooting stuff left and right. So I was like, that was kind of my big practice run at all these split screen things where it was like I copped the, you know, the effect where they do like the Queen effect where it's like the blue faces,
they're going down.
So I was like looking online, how can I recreate that without like actually like filming a TV with a camera and stuff. But yeah, so I kind of started getting, I always did some video editing, but like that was
okay.
I really got into it during the pandemic. Like, I was like, all right, let me dig in here and edit this thing.
What program were you using, just out of curiosity?
Premiere okay. Pro, all the Adobe stuff.
All right, I'm a Final Cut guy, but it's okay.
Okay.
No, but Adobe's cool though. Yeah.
It's well, Fernando's girlfriend, Cindy, did one of the videos that we did, and she's like, by profession, she's a film editor.
Right.
So like, she put me to shame by the time she did like the next video, but we. But she's like, you know, featured on like Avid's page and stuff. So she's doing, but she was available during the pinch. Like, I don't have any work coming in. So she was helping out with videos. She did the artwork for Ramon. She did the whole booklet.
Right.
And now she's back working, and I still don't have any gigs yet, but hey, so if you guys need any video editing.
Right. Well, when we had Fernando and Denny on, we were kind of like nudging him for, okay, Ram's done. Wildlife, let's do Wildlife now. So we want your help with that too now, you know, a little nudge.
I'll push for it. I'm pushing for live shows too. Like I was like I would love to take this out, and there's been like some talk of it, but I don't know that there's anything solid enough to talk about. But I know that they, because I think Fernando's original idea was that he wanted to play it live.
Yes.
And then it became an album, and now I think he's like, well, he's like, Denny's starting to get some offers. Like, do we want to put a band together? Like, will we do some stuff in LA? Like, so there's a couple things that I know, hopefully, are in the works. But I'm down to do, you know, just keep doing it. Do Wildlife, Red Rose Speedwell. I'm down
for Wildlife. Yeah, man, let's go, keep them going.
Yeah, and then you got to do Live and Let Die as well, you know, since that wasn't on the album. But anyways, no, we really enjoyed your you know, your tracks on there. So great job on those. We really appreciate that. So, but you also got some new songs out on your YouTube channel as well. I mean, I saw you got a new song out there called In California.
I do. Yeah, and it's from an album. So I put out a full album in February, and it's I recorded it all during the pandemic, and it's me on everything. I played all the instruments and wrote everything, and it's kind of I've been describing it as like a power pop rock opera, because it does tell a story, but it's kind of like kind of a loose allegory about 2020, because I was writing about the things that were happening, but I'm like, I don't want to write like what's in the news today, like, but it was hard to write about the things that were so like the coronavirus became like a monster. So like, there's like, it's kind of like a horror movie. So like all the artwork is like an 80s horror movie.
Right.
So it kind of, it was like a rock opera, tells a story. A guy drops out of college, moves to California, which is kind of my story, but then it kind of takes on a life of its own from there.
Okay.
And, yeah, so there's kind of parallels to 2020 in there, but it's starts off kind of real poppy and Beatles pop, you know, power pop stuff, right. And then it kind of gets more rock, and like there's Kiss was definitely an influence, and
right.
The Who, and kind of going back to the classic rock operas I was really listening to, is like what makes these things work, that like that it flows in the songs and it still tells a story. And like people have been comparing like the second half kind of to, you know, second half Abbey Road, because it has like little pieces of song that all kind of flow together.
And, I gotcha. Okay.
But I think Beatles fans and Paul fans will dig it. And it's available on Spotify and Bandcamp and Tale from the Other Side is what it's called.
What's the name of the album?
A Tale from the Other Side.
Okay, cool. I love it.
So it kind of has that. Kind of has that Stephen King title vibe.
I saw that. I thought that was really cool. That was a nice touch on that.
Thanks. Thanks.
Speaking of power pop, you know, I'm you know, I was, you know, a big, you know, 90s, first half of the 90s, the music. I love that scene. And, you know, one of my favorite power pop guys is Matthew Sweet. I don't know if you're a fan of his or not, but I really dig that power pop sound for sure.
Yeah. Sick of Myself was one of the first songs I played with like my high school band.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it was like, I think we opened up our like first set. We played, it was like a party for the school play or something, like the school musical. Right. And we just played like a party and we put a band together. And that was the first, we ended up staying together as a band for like 7 years while out of high school and toured and stuff. But like the first show we played was a Matthew Sweet tune. But I really got into like, it was more like late 90s for me. Like it was like Weezer was a huge influence.
Right.
And then like Fountains of Wayne and Ben Folds Five. Okay. And I really liked the Foo Fighters was a big influence because just the guy playing all the instruments. That was like the first time I heard of, besides like Paul and some of the other people, it was like, like a rock band. Dave Grohl played all the instruments on the first album. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's
Foo
cool.
Album. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And I was, and I was a drum. I wasn't even like a huge Nirvana fan, but I was just a fan of that first album. And then I found out, I was like, oh, this is one guy. Like, that's crazy. You can do that. So that really, like, as the years went on, it was like, okay, like, I like the idea of doing rock music, even though you're a solo act. Cause people say like, oh, like you're a solo singer songwriter. They think it's going to be like acoustic.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're doing it all. Right.
Yeah. Like, it should sound like a band if you're, you know.
I love that because then listen. If you're a singer songwriter and that's what you do, it's great. But what you do is great because you're doing everything, you know.
And it's just I don't like everyone was playing these acoustic online shows during the pandemic, and I was just like, that does not interest me. Like I'm sorry, like
oh, that's why what you do is. Yeah, it's awesome.
I have some really good friends that do a great job at, and like I just
great. It's great that, but it's like, you know, that's not your kind of thing.
I had no interest in it. Like if I'm not playing with a band or recording with myself, like, you know, with myself playing drums and whatever, it just like it just doesn't interest me if it's just like strumming an acoustic and sitting there for an hour.
What have you heard out in LA about touring? Because we're seeing acts starting to put out schedules for August, you know, and that around that time. I mean, what are your thoughts and what are you hearing?
You know, I'm not sure because I'm going to come back and do some dates with my father and uncles. And I think the first, there's like three dates at the end of June, early July. They're all outdoor like concert things. And then they started booking up like when it was like December and they started getting inquiries, they started pushing stuff like hopefully by August. So that was kind of their time frame. And I see, like, speaking of Weezer, I saw that they're supposed to do a stadium tour with Green Day and like Fall Out Boy, some other ones, and like they still haven't rescheduled it. Like they're supposed to be in LA at like Dodger Stadium in like July, and I keep kind of keeping an eye on them. Like it'd be interesting. I mean, that's outdoors,
right?
But I don't know. I've seen other tours that, like, I think Motley Crue just pushed theirs to 2022. So I don't know. I'm not sure what, you know, I know bars and stuff are starting to open up here, but they haven't really had a handful of bands I've seen having like some gigs in town. So I'm just kind of I'm planning a big road trip with my mom. I haven't seen her in like a year. So I'm like, all right, until there's gigs, I'm just going to do a big road trip across the country. Like I'm flying back and going to enjoy my time off until there's enough gigs.
It's a slow to come back. So, I mean, credit, you got to just kind of hang in there, man. You'll get your thing back.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've really, hey, but I've actually really enjoyed the pandemic, just to be able to like clear everything away and just record and be kind of one-minded. Really? Like it was awful for a lot of people, but I just had a blast. It was like, oh man, this is like a gift, because I'm usually like, gigs are how I make my money. Like I'm a full-time musician. So it was like, all right, I've done that since I was 18. So it's like, all right, for like two decades, I've been going out and gigging nonstop, and it's like you have to squeeze in, especially your own original music. It's like, all right, squeeze it in when I have a week off here, or I'm not traveling here, or you know, and then trying to juggle time with my girlfriend and time with, you know, whatever, just like social life. And it's like, all right, like, hey, you have a night off and you just really want to go in the studio and record all night, really? Like, yeah, I had the song idea. Just bear with me.
Hey, well, it worked for Prince.
yeah, exactly. That's Paisley Park was on my list of places across the country this summer. So
very cool. Last year you also talked about starting a new record label.
I did. So I had a lot of material sitting around, and I had my father and uncle's Mahoney Brothers had stuff from the years that was like original stuff. They had a lot of live recordings. I had like some friends of mine that had some projects, and I want to start producing more for other acts. So I was like, you know what, let me try to figure out a way to get it all under one umbrella. So I went and tracked down some old recordings from Mahoney Brothers and stuff that as I was releasing my album last year, and I was in a band before that. I just kind of just put it out under one umbrella and did like a subscription thing where I was putting out music every Friday. So it was like something was coming out from one of the acts, and I reached out to friends. I'm like, hey, do you have anything that you're working on that you want to put out? It'll feature to the acts. And then I'd dig up old videos and put them out for like Throwback Thursday videos and stuff. So for all of 2020, every Friday, I either put out a new song from the album that I was working on, or some old project that I dug up, or something, or like some friends of mine that I produced. So yeah, so it's been great. It's and I look forward to, you know, now having people in the studio and being able to and like have them over and actually like, hey, let's record in person and like, let me produce something for you.
Let's actually like function as a group.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, so noisewaterrecords.com, which was named after my first solo album that I did. It was which is like a deep Anchorman reference. Everyone's like, what's Noisewater mean? And I was like, yeah, it's why don't you Google it? Search Anchorman in there too. So people look it up and they're like, you named your record label after Paul Rudd's testicle? I was like, I didn't say it. You just Googled
you
that.
Said it. I didn't say it. You did.
A bandmate of mine was like, for years we were like, if we ever start a new band, Noisewater has such a great ring to it. Like it sounds like Stillwater from Almost Famous or something.
Yeah.
So I started labeling these demos like Noisewater, blah, 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 Noisewater this. So when I made the album, I just kept the title. And then people were like, where's that from? I was like, check out Anchorman.
Well, that's great. That's hilarious. Anything else you want to plug before we sign off?
I think we covered everything. Yeah. I mean,
you're on Twitter, right, Timmy? Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. It's at Timmy Sean. It's on, you can find Timmy Sean on Facebook. Mm-hmm. The album's available everywhere. Spotify, A Tale from the Other Side. It's on the CD. I have a cool CD package on Bandcamp that the CD comes housed inside of like an 80s VHS box that I designed. So like the CD slides out from there, and there's like a whole package. Like it comes with like a t-shirt and three stickers, and my first album comes with it, and I'll sign both CDs and stuff. It's like $25 for two CDs, a t-shirt, three stickers, the VHS box, So that's a cool package that people seem to dig.
Awesome.
And you have the Ram On Al CD right there with you, right?
And then I And then I have this right here, which I believe is a little delayed in the States, but you can still pre-order. It should be shipping, I believe, by the end of the month. I think
Are you going to get sent like a bunch of copies for promotion? Like to
so I have this one, this one and one other copy to give to, this is actually really cool. I'll mention, my, girlfriend's younger brother, who's, he's graduating high school in a couple weeks, played some piano on Monkberry. So I got him to, I walked him through how to record. He lives in Pennsylvania. So I walked him through how to record remotely. He's a great piano player. He plays drums and everything. He's like 18, but he's a huge Wings fan. And I was like, nice. I was like, hey, do you need piano on this? And Fernando's like, yeah, yeah, I do. So it ended up being like several piano players on it, but he, and he's playing, I ran it through the program where you can sample the Abbey Road Mrs. Mills piano. Ooh. So he's like playing like the actual Mrs. Mills piano. So he, yeah, Nick Dorkowski is credited in the CD.
Oh, that's great.
So
that's awesome.
Really cool. And there's,
there's
other people that on the album that I know like pulled their kids in, that I'll see in the credits. And you, if you see like some of her husbands and wives, but if you see some of them, like I think on Monkberry, Morty, where is it? Let's see, Smile Away, Monkberry. Yeah, like listed right after here, 20 different background singers. But yeah, Beatrix and Morty Cole. And Beatrix is, I think she's like 13. It's like Morty's daughter. So like, it's really fun. Everyone had a real kick, you know, hold up right at home to be able to like, hey, why don't you come in and sing some backups on this? And like,
right.
You know, well, it was great, which kind of adds to the family feel of the whole,
of
you know,
the original thing. Album and everything. Anyway, yeah. Right, yep. Right.
Perfect. Perfect. Absolutely. Andy, anything you want to ask before anything else? Before
No, we're good. No, Timmy, this was great, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Like, it was great talk.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we can't wait to get this. We can't wait to continue to push.
I hope you get it soon.
I want a vinyl release, damn it.
Yeah.
I think Fernando confirmed the other day that the label gave the go-ahead. It's going to be out for the holidays. So
nice. Win.
Perfect.
Win.
I'm not sure. I know they keep saying for wonderful Christmas time is the line they keep using. So I don't know if it's going to be like November or December, but hopefully I'm sure at some point in the fall they're doing a run of it. So
breaking kinda news, we're going to get the vinyl.
Yes.
Good. So, because like honestly, in a vinyl package with all those notes and artwork and stuff, it really needs to be done right. If we could see it nice on big and a big, like a big book, like it's great that it's all in the CD. But if that was given like a vinyl treatment with a gatefold and everything, and we could see all the credits and big,
ten different colored vinyl ish copies, you know,
I don't think so. Not from Cherry Red. They're not Cherry Red's going to give you one copy, one version.
Just for you, Tom. We'll get 10 right. copies.
Yeah.
We'll be like coloring it with a marker.
Oh, you know he will. You know he will.
Oh, excellent.
This was a great guy. Looks colored vinyl.
Yeah, this was a great joy talking about your experience with the Ram On and the Laboratory Lil. So everybody, if you haven't, go to Timmy Sean's YouTube channel, and it's just Timmy Sean, right? And you can find out all that information there. You can see his video for Laboratory Lil. Obviously, Fernando Perdomo put up a link for everybody who hasn't gotten the CD yet. They can go and they can get the streaming or the digital file for it, so you can listen to Ram On as well. And man, I was just so excited hearing this for the first time that I just couldn't wait to tell people about this CD. I'm still so soaked about this, and I really hope he continues with maybe Wildlife and maybe Red Rose Speedway. You never know. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. So Timmy, thank you very much. Andy, you know, as always, you know, I can't do this without you, my friend.
Likewise.
So you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Two Legs Podcast. You can find us on YouTube at Two Legs Podcast. I'm sorry, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. Our website, twolegspodcast.com. And man, we're just all over the place. Podbean, Instagram, I mean, Podbean, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon.
Just Google it. You'll find it.
We're everywhere. And again, Timmy, much success to you in the future. And hopefully if there's any other McCartney things projects coming up that you do, we'll be more than happy to have you back on and talk about that. And
thanks guys. We'd love to.
Yeah. And so everybody, as usual, everybody out there, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
You've been listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan.